Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by the USA Today Florida Network. Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley square off in the third GOP presidential debate in Miami, while Trump tries to steal the show with a rally nearby in Hialeah. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are the stories I'll be discussing this week with Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns and Palm Beach Post politics reporter Stephanie Matat, who were covering all the South Florida action yesterday. But first, Antonio and Stephanie, I know you both had busy nights last night covering the debate and the rally, but I know you still found time to pick some numbers for us. Stephanie, what do you have?
I'm going to go with the decimal this time. I'm going to go with 56.6.
56.6. All right. Decimal places are allowed. Antonio, how about you?
I guess Stephanie is trying to channel John, but I went with 61,633.
61,633. All right, and my number is 65. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, last night, the GOP presidential primary came to Miami, and both Stephanie and I and Antonio were here to cover all the debate action. I'm actually still in Miami. I'm sitting in my hotel room recording this while I look out the window at the Miami Heat basketball arena, and it's a beautiful sunny morning here in Miami. Stephanie, I'm wondering, do you think it's a good morning for DeSantis? He went into last night's debate with the warning signs sort of flashing for his campaign. I think if DeSantis's campaign was a car, I think pretty much every warning light would be on right now. The check engine light, the, you know, get your oil replaced light, the, you know, battery charge light. DeSantis's campaign has been, you know, struggling. And he went into last night's debate, you know, really needing to again, make an impression. We've said that about each of these debates, but Nikki Haley really is creeping up on him now. She's pulled ahead of him in the polls, both in New Hampshire and South Carolina, and was tied with him in a recent Iowa poll, which is really bad if you think about the fact that DeSantis is really banking his entire campaign on Iowa. There was a sense that maybe DeSantis needed to take Haley on directly and knock her off stride a little bit. What are some of your takeaways from his performance?
You know, I agree with you that it was a sunny day in South Florida, but I do think that there is some clouds in the sky for DeSantis after last night's debate. You know, he's been fighting with the former UN ambassador for second place since Haley's been on the rise in the polls. But last night really showed how she's been doing that, you know, and she's and how she surpassed DeSantis in early voting states since she had bypassed shots thrown at her and snapped back when provoked. But to DeSantis's credit, you know, he gave sharp answers on how he would offer support to Israel and was forceful about how he'd combat drugs crossing the southern border. But he was strong about his position of punishing universities for allowing anti-Semitic protests. Yet he was careful in some topics. He would stay clear when asked if he would support a federal ban on abortion when that discussion came up, and defending his position of no drilling in the Everglades. It was a strong night for him where he spoke to voters about the issues that GOPers care about. But he took about 45 minutes to get to jabbing at Haley. And, that time it was about courting Chinese businesses as governor. So viewers came in looking, and I saw headlines everywhere looking to watch DeSantis and Haley. And that's what I saw absolutely everywhere. But Haley really came out in the spotlight for this debate.
Yeah, you know, Haley has had some really strong debates, and she actually was the one who came out swinging last night, not DeSantis. I noticed really that DeSantis never went on the offensive. He was really only going after Haley and others when he was attacked himself. And as you mentioned, Haley went after him on issues like China. She also attacked his record on oil and gas drilling, again, noting that he had signed an executive order when he was governor banning fracking and offshore drilling. in the state. She jabbed at him on the issue of Social Security. What did she make of it? I mean, DeSantis really, again, was much more on defense than he was on offense.
You know, yeah, that's exactly what I saw, where he had these very sharp answers. He was focused on speaking to voters, but he didn't really go back and talk back to Nikki like everyone was expecting. Everyone is expecting that DeSantis was going to try to jab back at her, criticize her. But that's not what we saw over here. He was keeping kind of to himself. If anything, we saw all the spotlight between Vivek and Haley, especially when Vivek made that comment about Haley's daughter.
That was really the sharpest exchange of the night. I mean, she called him Vivek scum and said, keep my daughter's name out of your mouth. That she continues to just really have some really pointed answers on the debate stage and really some of the most viral moments. Antonio, I wonder what you think of DeSantis's performance. He seems to, you know, do okay in these debates, you know, no major flubs. But his answers are pretty polished, and he really knows how to hit his talking points. But again, he didn't do anything to really stand out, I don't think. And he really didn't take Haley on directly, as a lot of people were thinking. He seems to be kind of playing it safe and really not trying to have any major screw ups, but also not really standing out that much.
Yeah, he sort of, if not for the name Donald Trump, that's what you would expect, because he would be, up to now, you know, sort of that group that's on the stage, he would be the leader. And that's generally what the leader of the pack does, kind of stay above the fray, play it safe, don't commit an unforced error, emerge still the leader of the pack. The problem is that he's not the leader of the pack.
It right,
is
that's what I'm going to say. He's not really exactly the leader. You can't act as the front runner when you're losing in New Hampshire and South Carolina to key states, and he's actually pretty far behind Haley in some of these polls in early states, exactly. and tied in Iowa. And these play it safe performances that he's done in these past debates haven't moved the needle at all. It you know, he keeps falling behind. You would think that at some point he's got to make a move here and try and stand out and try and do something to kind of get some momentum, get people fired up, get people behind him. But it still seems like he really is playing it safe.
Because he is in the shadow and under the specter of one Donald Trump. And remember, if you roll back the clock 4 months, we'd be having the same discussion, but within the context of Trump attacking him, but DeSantis not wanting to attack Trump. And part of the problem that he has had all along is that he is in the same lane ideologically as Trump. And they're vying for the same number of voters, same crowd of voters. And the problem is that crowd is very loyal to Donald Trump. The MAGA crowd is loyal to Trump, not to DeSantis. When you drive around, at least down here, I see Trump flags. I don't see DeSantis flags. The Trump movement is a very different political animal. And you get the impression that what DeSantis is concerned about is attacking Trump and then angering that group. Which, right, by the way, Trump is coming after him because he has painted DeSantis as disloyal.
Right.
And the Trump base calling somebody disloyal is like in the mob calling somebody a rat. It's it. It's a coup de grace. And I believe that has, you know, it's almost like, to use a football analogy, a quarterback that gets sacked on a blitz, and then he's got that clock in his mind constantly. I got to throw the ball quickly. And it kind of, everything discombobulates. And you kind of see that about him, that he seems very unsure of himself. Now, the other point that I'll bring up about the debate last night, which was the early viral moment, was when Vivek Ramaswamy went after Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ron McDaniel and basically pegged 6 years of losses, electoral losses, on McDaniel, and basically humiliated her in front of her own audience in a debate that she is kind of presiding over. And then she kind of shot back that, you know, this, you know, internal Republican infighting doesn't help anybody. And this is something we saw play out in the U.S. House Speaker fight, this internal Republican struggle between the, you know, the far right and the more establishment Republicans. And this is one thing that as we go into 2024, if whoever the nominee is, and it's likely to be Trump, I guess, isn't able to work this out, it could end up being costly next November.
One thing I also noticed is that it seems like DeSantis is still acting like this is just a race between him and Trump. You know, he did have some, you know, relatively mild criticisms of Trump, partly because he was prompted in the first debate question, asked, you know, why should voters choose you over Trump? But also, you know, he slipped in some other things here and there. He seems to still, in his mind, just want to think that this is just a race between him and Trump, and try and frame it that way, that, you know, that he is, you know, the only person who can take on Trump. But the facts on the ground have changed. And Nikki Haley has made this more of a competitive race for second. And he seems like he doesn't really want to engage that much and make it seem like he is. Being challenged here, but those are the facts. And do you think that his strategy has failed to evolve based on the circumstances?
Well, the problem is that it's not a race with Trump. It's not by every poll we've seen, he's 20, 30, 40 points behind Trump. I mean, if Trump were at 43% and he were at 40% and everybody else were dividing up the remaining 20% or so, yeah, then it is a race with Trump, but it's not. And he has not found the way to basically dig into the MAGA base, the Trump base, start pulling away those voters, and then separate himself from Nikki Haley and the quote-unquote establishment guys, other than Vivek, who's more in that far-right lane. And that's the problem that he has, and it's gotten really late in the game. It's November. Iowa is, 60 days away? Now, he did land a really important endorsement. The Iowa governor has endorsed him, so that will help. And, you know, and Iowa is a caucus state. It's a lot of knocking on doors and shaking hands and, you know, getting your machine out to get them out. So it's a kind of a different animal than simply, you know, like Florida, where it's a huge media market and you have to make a splash in a debate or with a massive advertising campaign that is very costly. Iowa and New Hampshire are very different that way. So, you know, it's a little dangerous to make predictions, you know, about a place like Iowa or New Hampshire. But nonetheless, he has not, as we've been talking about, he's not found his stride. He's not found his narrative that you see him pulling away voters, you know, because even polls in Iowa showed Trump well ahead of him.
And I don't think that DeSantis had a bad debate, but Haley has all the momentum right now among the candidates who aren't Trump. And where is the moment that gives DeSantis some momentum and tries to take away some of Haley's momentum? It seems to me like that's really what he needs to do, is try and slow her momentum. But it seems like the folks who are gravitating towards her, there was nothing to pull them away last night. And I just don't know if that strategy is going to work for him. Well, while DeSantis and the rest of the field were duking it out in Miami, Trump was a few miles away in Hialeah for a rally that drew a big crowd. The counter-programming event was an effort by Trump to overshadow his competitors and show his popularity with the GOP base. Hialeah is a blue-collar Hispanic community that is extremely pro-Trump. Antonio, I know you were monitoring the rally. Give us a sense of what it was like.
Well, you know what, Zach? You know, we've been preparing for this for weeks. We knew the day would come where you would have this kind of a split screen moment between Trump and his Republican challengers. And you know what? At the end of the night, we actually did get a debate of sorts between Trump and his Republican rivals, or better said, you know, a real contrast, even though they were speaking on separate stages. Trump was in Hialeah. He came on the stage at about the same time that the debate kicked off in downtown Miami. And he ended his speech just about the same time that, you know, DeSantis, Haley, and the three others were giving their closing statements. You know, and Trump and the others, you know what? They all kind of talked about the same policy menu: the border with Mexico, China, trade, fears of World War III, the economy, energy policy. The big difference was in substance and tone. The Miami debate delved into policy. We heard about how many weeks should the country ban abortions? How many more ships does the U.S. Navy need? And at what age should future generations of Americans expect to be able to retire? By contrast, Trump's speech was heavy on vitriol, but light on details other than him promising a strong economy, and that the wars in Ukraine and Israel will end when he's elected, and that he will carry out the largest deportation plan ever in U.S. history. And of course, a lot of talk about dismantling the deep state. You know, that was the bulk of the speech, which was filled with references to enemies of America and himself, and vows to destroy the radical left, the communists, the Marxists, the fascists, and the opposition, and that America only belongs to those, the types of people that were in his attendance last night. The deep state, by the way, is never really defined other than it's some aspect of government that Trump base has learned to despise, whether it be the FBI or some other branch of government or agency. But a Trump 47 presidency, you can bet on this, will wage war on government administration, to paraphrase him, like we've never ever seen before. You know, he's promised to persecute and prosecute even U.S. military leaders. And last night, by the way, you know, the warm-up acts by Roseanne Barr and Donald Trump Jr. were chock full of R-rated language, you know, words we can't say on this podcast, as they also really talked about the deep state. And although Trump, you know, I will say, kind of toned down some of his routines, like, you know, he didn't walk around the stage mimicking what he says is a confused Joe Biden, or another routine that, you know, in which he is kind of almost a comedic routine where he's mimicking a trans weightlifter. But he did engage in a lot of, you know, pretty sharp vitriol. Now, the sharpest contrast, however, I think last night was between the 2023 version of Trump and the 2019 version of Trump. You know, voters may think of 2019 Trump as someone who took to Twitter and posted missives that, as his daughter Ivanka once said, communicated in a way that was not to everyone's taste. But the average voter will also probably recall that Trump did deliver a strong economy and some groundbreaking foreign policy initiatives. 2023 Trump, however, offers a much more dystopian and despising vision for Americans, and one in which war on enemies takes up much of his time, focus, and attention. So the question for GOP voters in Florida and elsewhere is, do you want a nominee who's going to be able to go head-to-head with President Biden on the issues and beat him on the issues, and a president who is pretty unpopular on issues that you can win on, the economy, inflation, and so forth? Or are you going to go with 2023 version of Trump that rages and flails against deep state enemies and where governing seems to take a back seat? You know, if the polls are right, it's the latter, even if the overall public, those not in the MAGA movement, may not understand that completely.
Antonio, when Trump and DeSantis and some of the other candidates were in Florida over the weekend in Orlando at a Florida GOP summit, Trump really didn't hold back. You know, I mean, this was DeSantis's home turf. A lot of GOP activists look at DeSantis favorably, but he didn't shy away from absolutely savaging him in front of the crowd there. You know, he continued to call him sanctimonious. He was mocking him and talking about how he begged for his endorsement when he ran for governor in 2018, and said that he had tears in his eyes and was crying as he was begging for his endorsement. And the crowd, you know, didn't push back on that. And in fact, there were some people were laughing as Trump was criticizing him. Any of that at this latest rally? What was his posture towards DeSantis and some of the other candidates?
Well, no, he kept calling him DeSantis, and basically, but didn't go into a lot of the, you know, what he has talked about, what you heard, what you just described, where he kind of tells a story about how DeSantis came crying to him and he rescued and saved them. I think, you know, the only one that he really did mention without using name was Vivek Ramaswamy, kind of, you know, applauded him for, you know, standing up for a lot of what Trump tends to talk about. But I, you know, it was this debate, and I, you know, you saw him in Orlando. I saw him in West Palm Beach last month. You know, I watched pretty much all his speeches. I saw the one in Orlando. This one was a bit more muted. I think that he toned down. He didn't do some of these routines that he usually does, like as I mentioned. So this one was really heavy on deep state, heavy on government coming after people. I think the most some of the most eyebrow-raising language was when he talked about a police state in America that is persecuting Catholics and Christians. And that was one of the guys like, okay, what, you know, because when you listen to these people, sometimes you try to figure out, okay, because he doesn't go into details. He just throws things out there. So I'm like thinking, okay, well, did I read about this somewhere? Did I hear what that moment, you know? But that was it. I think some of the more bombastic language actually came from Roseanne Barr and Donald Trump Jr. And I can't repeat what they said because this is a PG-rated podcast. But a lot of the bombast was left to the undercards in his rally last night, the warm-up acts. He was a little bit more muted, a little bit more restrained, shall we say, than we have seen him before.
Stephanie, DeSantis won Miami-Dade County when he ran for re-election in 2022. And that was huge. You know, Republicans hadn't won Miami-Dade in years. It is a key Democratic stronghold. I mean, if Democrats can't win Miami-Dade, they have no chance of winning Florida. But Trump, you know, so, and that winning Miami-Dade and winning Florida is a big part of DeSantis's argument about how, you know, the GOP hasn't performed well in the Trump era, but I'm a winner, and if you go with me, I can deliver us victory. Trump came to Miami-Dade and basically tried to outshine DeSantis in this key base for him. What did you think? I mean, what do you make of Trump trying to lay claim to the hearts and minds of GOP voters here in South Florida?
Well, Miami is a really important base because in Florida, you know, we've seen that last year, Miami-Dade County has reddened significantly, and it has around 1.5 million voters. But specifically, when it comes to Trump, Trump has a really big stronghold on the Hispanic community in Miami, which consists primarily of Cubans and Venezuelans. And, you know, we saw that when he went to Hialeah. Hialeah has around 95% Hispanic population. Looking at numbers alone, you know, we have when I was looking at it last night, we have 1.5 million voters. Around 60% are Hispanics. The majority are Republican. And the unique portion about Miami is how strong and energetic this base is. That when we see election years, you know, we see rallies in Miami. They're vast. They're wild. They're energetic. That's what we see. But both candidates are trying to appeal to this base. So last night in the debate, when it came to DeSantis, that's something he spoke directly to in his first remarks when asked about Trump and how he's going to court these voters. The first thing he said was, you know, he's tired of Republicans losing, but he made wins in Miami. He made that 12 percentage point margin win in 2022. And Trump, well, on the other hand, Trump went to Hialeah and Trump said, you know, I have a big portion of the Hispanic community crowd coming here instead of going to the debate. And frankly, that's true. We didn't see anyone around the debate. When I walked around, we didn't see any demonstrators. But, you know, instead, when it comes to Trump, we see tons of people show up at his rallies. And we also saw that with the arraignment in Miami. It was large crowds piling around the courthouse. So Trump really does have that factor. And, you know, in Miami, he really has that hold on GOP voters. And DeSantis is also trying to court that, but it's important to note here how much that the Florida GOP is really, really trying to court and to rely on this voting group in Miami that's become so crucial.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I mean, the Hispanic voters in Florida are huge. You know, they're a group that leans a little more Republican than Hispanic voters nationally. And Hialeah is actually obviously a huge epicenter for the Hispanic vote in South Florida. So Trump going there and showing that he has strong support among blue collar Hispanics was, you know, him definitely trying to make a point that, you know, he can assemble the Republican coalition needed to win. So we'll see how that debate plays out. Well, we'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, Zach, I had 61,633, and that is, as of this November, 12 months away from the all-important 2024 election. That number, 61,633, is the difference in the number of active registered Democrats and Republicans in Palm Beach County. Now, let me set the stage as to why this number is kind of important right now. In the 11 presidential midterm elections in Florida since 2002,
Democratic candidates running statewide have already done very poorly. Part of it is that their shrinking voter base from Key West to Pensacola has continued to basically shrink. In the past quarter century, Democratic candidates running statewide have relied more and more on the urban counties, especially South Florida, in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. So this axiom has been created that for a Democratic candidate, whether it's the presidential nominee or the attorney general nominee or the U.S. Senate candidate, that Democrat needed to win the South Florida counties by overwhelming margins in order to have a shot at being elected. That's been the formula in the 21st century. That formula got a shock in 2020 when Trump won large swaths of Hispanics in Miami-Dade County, leading to a comfortable 3.4 percentage point statewide win, although he lost nationally to President Biden. But that 3.4%, given what we had seen, going back to 2000, where Florida was decided by 537 votes, that 3.4% was a competitive landslide. But the jolt in 2020 was nothing compared to the 2022 shock and awe when Governor Ron DeSantis and the statewide Republican candidates rode to massive landslide wins and carried Miami-Dade and Palm Beach counties. That GOP sweep was so decisive and dominant that pundits had no longer consider Florida a swing state or a battleground state. It's just in the red GOP column now. So the postmortem analysis after 2022 was that Democrats needed to get back in the game by refocusing on nuts and bolts of elections, including registering voters and then making sure those voters cast ballots. That brings us to 61,633. Because, Zach, a year ago, the Democratic Party in Palm Beach County counted a lead over Republicans of 110,156 active voters. Now it's just over 61,000. So, in fact, since a humiliating 2022 landslide, the GOP has further narrowed the Democrats' advantage in blue Palm Beach County by almost 50,000 votes. They cut that lead almost in half. In another year at this rate, they may be close to even. And that could spell a game over scenario for Democrats running statewide. Now, we can talk about there's a number of reasons why this is a trend. One of them is demographics, people moving to the county. We are surmising are mostly GOP or GOP-leaning voters who are coming from blue states. Another is that there's been a surge in Hispanic evangelicals in places like Miami-Dade. And as Stephanie has reported earlier this year, and I talked on the podcast, there's been some distracting conflict within the Palm Beach County Democratic Party. So there are a lot of causes, but there's one result, and that is that right now, a month away or so from 2024, that election year is positioned to be another red tsunami in Florida.
Yeah, that's such a huge issue, Antonio. Democrats struggled to be competitive statewide when they had hundreds of thousands of more registered voters than Republicans. Now, Republicans have hundreds of thousands more registered voters than Democrats in Florida, partly because, you see blue counties like Miami-Dade and Palm Beach getting more competitive. And it's hard to see if Democrats were having problems when they had a voter registration advantage. Now that they're at a disadvantage, it's really difficult to see how they're going to be competitive going forward. Stephanie, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, so my number is 56.6, and that's the percentage of voters who approved the constitutional amendment in Ohio Tuesday night that would ensure access to abortion and other forms of reproductive health care. But what's so important about this number is, Democrats had victories all over the nation Tuesday, especially on abortion, but that vote came up in last night's debate where all the candidates gave their perspectives on abortion and described whether they'd support a federal abortion ban. As I said earlier, DeSantis treaded carefully on this topic, but Haley, she got the most spotlight on this discussion for saying that although she doesn't agree with the states that voted for abortion, the voters decided. And so her message was to find consensus to bring more accessible reproductive health and contraception. Her message was to find that sort of middle ground. And because she said that, realistically, that the votes were not in Congress to have a federal abortion ban. So, other candidates talked about their positions. Tim Scott really emphasized that 15-week federal abortion ban, which Haley responded again that the votes weren't there. And she said she wanted to be honest to voters. But that message really, really resonated with voters to find consensus for the moderate Republicans who are worried about these GOP losses that have been nationwide since the Dobbs decision. You know, 2022 was also a tough year because of abortion nationwide. And Tuesday night also showed that same pattern. So moderate Republicans really got to have a good eye with Nikki Haley last night, at least with when it came to the abortion discussion.
Yeah, I thought the abortion discussion last night was really interesting. You know, Haley, as you said, gave a much more nuanced answer on this issue than we've really seen from a lot of Republicans. DeSantis had really doubled down on his anti-abortion message. And you see how the party is sort of grappling with this issue and trying to figure out how they're going to message this going forward, because the political headwinds on abortion for the GOP look pretty strong. And I think we're going to see that here in Florida. Well, we might, you know, there's a effort to get a abortion rights amendment on the ballot here. The state has a higher threshold to pass constitutional amendments than Ohio. You'd have to get 60% of the vote. But if they are able to get it on the ballot, it really could be a big wild card here in Florida in 2024 as well. Well, my number is 65. That's the traditional retirement age, but there's a debate about whether younger people should have to wait longer to be able to draw a Social Security check. And that issue really flared up at last night's GOP primary debate when the candidates were asked about Social Security form. And there was actually a really interesting contrast between Haley and DeSantis. Haley said, anybody saying that there doesn't need to be some entitlement reforms is not being honest. And she said she would raise the age for retirement for younger people who are currently in their 20s. And she also took a jab at DeSantis and at Trump on the issue, saying they're really in the same camp as Pelosi and Chuck Schumer in not wanting to touch entitlements. Trump has completely changed the debate in the GOP on entitlement reform and tried to take it off the table as an issue. It's been seen by some Republicans as hurting the party, you know, and it's given Democrats some ammunition to say that Republicans want to, you know, take away your Social Security or your Medicare. And so Trump has really gone against the grain of the Republican orthodoxy on this issue. And he's taken a lot of people in the party with him. DeSantis seems to be taking a cue from Trump. When he was pressed, he said that he wouldn't point blank. He said he wouldn't raise the retirement age because he said life expectancy is actually declining in this country. So it didn't make sense to raise the retirement age if life expectancy is going down. And DeSantis's position just was further highlighted how the debate has changed within the Republican Party on this issue. But it's clear that there's still quite a few people like Haley and others who are worried about entitlement spending. So this seems like a very live issue for Republicans in this primary cycle. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.